Good morning, members. The Public Integrity and Ethics Committee will come to order. Will Sanjay please call the roll?
Chair Grawl?
Present.
Vice Chair Roach?
Present.
Democrat Ranking Member Davis?
Present.
Representative Brannon?
Here.
Byrd?
Here.
Casello?
Here.
Clemmons?
Here.
Duggan?
Here.
Ingolia?
Here.
Killebrew?
Here.
Coster? Perez?
Here.
Silvers? Smith?
Here.
Stevenson, excused. Tant?
Present.
Thompson? Valdez?
Present.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Sanjay. Members, please, and audience, please make sure that all electronic devices are turned off or on silent mode. Members, we have three bills before us today. First bill that we will take up is HB 573 by Representative Beltran. Representative Beltran, you are recognized to present your bill. Representative Beltran, can I hang on 1 second? I don't think the mic is on. We're recognized.
Perfect. Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My HB 573 establishes a fiduciary duty of care applicable to appointed public officials and requires them to undergo training regarding their obligations within 180 days of appointment. That is the bill.
Members, we're going to take questions on the bill before we move to the amendments. Are there any questions on the bill? Seeing none, we will move to amendment number 478195. Representative Beltran, you are recognized to present the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. This amendment excludes three different categories of appointed officials from the scope of the bill. Two of those categories are public officials who don't really deal with a budget, and so the fiduciary duty wouldn't be as applicable. And the third category is the pension board, which already has a fiduciary duty, and they have the fiduciary duty to their pensioners, not necessarily to the public as a whole.
Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? Seeing no public testimony on the amendment, is there debate members on the amendment? Seeing none, you are recognized to close.
Wave close, Chair.
All those in favor of the amendment, please indicate by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed, nay. Seeing no opposition, the amendment passes. We will now move on to amendment barcode 833209. Representative Beltran, you are recognized to present the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. This amendment changes the public officials are required to submit a form attesting that they've completed their training. In the original form of the bill, we had that go to the Secretary of State, but we realized it would be better if it went to the Commission on Ethics because they already keep forms for other officials such as ourselves, as everyone knows. So that is the amendment.
Having presented the amendment, members, are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, seeing no public testimony on the amendment, we are now in debate on the amendment. Seeing no debate, you are recognized to close.
Wave close, Chair.
Okay, waving close on the amendment. Members, all those in favor of the amendment, please indicate so by saying yay.
Yay.
And those not in favor of the amendment, nay. The amendment passes. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there questions on the bill as amended? Seeing, yes. Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized for questions on the bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair. Beltran, what is the procedure now? Is there a procedure in place for the training of members that are appointed to boards now in place?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep, for the question. I'm not aware of any training requirement currently in place for appointed public officials.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up?
You're recognized for series.
With the new, the training methods in place and a cost to a local government, do you see any possible lack of oversight or unintended consequences for training the fiscal cost that it will, you know, implementing this legislation will put on a local government if they don't have these dollars and cents in their budget for this particular training?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that question. Certainly legitimate concern, but we put in the bill that if the body to which the officials are appointed has a budget under $300,000, that they can do the training in-house. If it's under $100,000, they're not subject to the bill. That's another exception. And we put as many different categories of training providers that we could think of in the in the bill. And if you have other ideas of training providers, I'm certainly welcome your thoughts. But we do want them to get the training, and the consequence of not having that training and going in for some of these boondoggles that we've seen around the state, I think would by orders of magnitude outstrip the cost of this training.
So, follow-up, Chair?
Yes, you're recognized. First series, back and forth.
Okay, just one more. So it's noted that you have the Florida League of Cities supports this, the Commission on Ethics supports this, as well as the Florida Bar, the Department of Management Services. Do you have any of our agencies right now that do not support this or feel like this would impede them in any type of way, meaning some of the language here is unclear for the executive officer, particularly in the Department of Health?
Thank you. We did hear from the Department of Health, and they had proposed an amendment and came to my attention late yesterday afternoon. We spoke to them. We're going to work with them, I guess, before the next stop to see if an amendment's appropriate, and if so, implement that.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. Are there any other questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, we will move into public testimony. First, we have David Serdar, representing himself, Lake County, Florida Supervisor of Elections Needs Training, may be disqualified trespassing me. Mr. Serdar, it indicates here that you wish to appear in person. I know you have put in appearance cards on the bills before us today. It also indicates on this form that you are appearing at my written request, and I need to make sure that, for the record, I have not requested that you appear on behalf of any of the bills today, and I would ask that when you fill out the form in the future, you are careful to ensure that you're checking the right boxes. You are recognized.
David Serdar, 65-year-old senior that's not smart with a smartphone. And I'm not. I apologize. I work at the speed of life, and I sleep in my car, and I signed up at about 2 o'clock in the morning for quite a few meetings because I do care, and I probably won't be back up here because I can't afford to be. I'm worried about our society. I was a candidate this year. And Imogen Seale, I was a candidate almost in 2016. I moved down here November 15th.
Mr. Serdar, would you please stay to the topic of the
bill? Well, I believe that we do need, this bill. Because I'm a perfect example. What happens? A supervisor of election that was a senator that, told me about my teeth. He's a dentist. I go to his office. He knows all about me. I run for office. He's now the supervisor of election, the old one, 35 years in service, a Democrat. Hey, I work with Democrats and Republicans. They're great people. And Imogen Seale got the name of the building. I was there when they opened the new building, the Supervisor of Elections. Senator Backlash, Peyton Grinnell was there. I got pictures of it. The ribbon cutting. And then the guy doesn't let me in when he names the building for Imogen Seale, who had her first baby in Lake County, Illinois, and her husband worked at a cookie factory, my wife's grandfather's cookie factory.
I appreciate you appearing today, but this is outside the scope of this bill, and so we would ask. We understand that you're a proponent, and I think that the committee understands that this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also appearing, Philip Sutterman from Americans for Prosperity. He waves in support. That is the end of public testimony, members. We are in debate on the bill. Is there debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative is there debate? Would you like, Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few words. Beltran, tell me in your closing if we've seen this bill before. It feels like we've seen this bill before, and I think the last time, and I'm not sure, but it does feel like we've seen this bill before. But what I'll say to you is I know you have work to do on this with the Department of Health, where it concerns their board and councils and their healthcare boards. So I heard you say your door is open and you want to talk to those stakeholders, and they're coming up with an amendment. So I'm going to be down on this bill today because I want to see that amendment and see how it changes this. Not really sure where we're going with this. I do understand we need the training and that kind of thing, but I just want that to be clear and cleaned up before I agree to support this bill. So I'll be down today.
On the bill. Seeing no further debate, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just address Rep. Davis' remarks. Yes, we saw this bill. In fact, I remember you were at the first stop in the committee. We had a discussion last year. Subsequently, we passed the bill out of committee. The bill, we ended up amending this onto something else, and we did pass that off the floor at least once, if not twice. It bounced back from the Senate, and the underlying vehicle, if you will, was not something that the Senate could support. And at the end of the day, we just didn't feel like we could use somebody else's bill as a vehicle and just pass this, so we let it go during the last week of session. So that's probably more detail than anyone wanted to know, but that's what happened with the bill. You did see it before, and like I said, we'll work with the Department of Health and take a look at their amendment. With that, I close.
Thank you. Sanjay, would you please call the roll?
Chair Grawl?
Yes.
Vice Chair Roach? Democrat Ranking Member Davis? Representative Brannon?
Yes.
Byrd?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Engolia?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Coster? Perez?
Yes.
Silvers? Smith?
Yes.
Stevenson? Tant?
Yes.
Thompson? Valdez?
Yes.
The bill passes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. By your vote, Bill HB 573 by Representative Beltran is reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Members, next we will hear from Representative Barnaby on HB 1585. Representative Barnaby, you are recognized to present the bill.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. HB 1585, Government Accountability. The bill creates the Florida Integrity Office within the Office of Auditor General to ensure accountability and integrity in state and local government. The Florida Integrity Officer may investigate complaints alleging waste, fraud, abuse, mismanagement, or misconduct in connection with the expenditure of public funds. Beginning in 2022 through 2023 fiscal year, the Florida Integrity Officer will also conduct random audits and inspections of appropriations projects appropriated in the prior year, as well as the financial activities of certain state and local government entities. The bill requires the Auditor General to publish a report consolidating common operational audit findings for all state agencies and state universities and school boards. The bill revises the Auditor General's notification responsibilities by shortening the cycle from 3 successive operational audits to 2. The bill provides a mechanism for the state to recover funds when the Chief Inspector General or an agency inspector general determines a public official, independent contractor, or agency has committed fraud, waste, abuse, mismanagement, or misconduct in government. The bill also authorizes the Chief Financial Officer to commence a fraud investigation based on a complaint or referral from any source, including an employee of a state agency or state contractor. The bill provides a financial incentive for agency employees to file Whistleblower Act complaints and participate in investigations that lead to the recovery of funds. It requires agency contracts to include the following specified terms that ensure the public agency can inspect within 10 business days after such request. The bill prohibits a state employee from lobbying for funding for an appropriation and also participating in the negotiating and awarding of any contracts in connection with the appropriation. The bill prohibits a tax incentive from being awarded or paid to a state contractor or any subcontractor for services provided or expenditures incurred pursuant to a state contract. Other procurement tweaks are also included. And that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Barnaby. Members, are there questions? Representative Tant, you are recognized.
Thank you. I mentioned this to you before when we first started. So what is the difference between this Office of Public Integrity and the difference between what the Auditor General does and what the Auditor General of every state agency does, and further what the Commission on Ethics does? I'm confused as to the different roles here.
Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tan, thank you for that question. I'm going to be giving you a more comprehensive breakdown of that answer. I explained to you earlier that there are 29 other states that have this particular bill on their books right now. Some of those states include New Jersey, New York, Mississippi, Nevada, et cetera. But as far as giving you a comprehensive breakdown, I believe that my colleague, Mr. Rubottom, will be able to get with you later and give you a more comprehensive breakdown of your answer, your question. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I believe the general answer is the difference between the ability to investigate versus just audit, but we will certainly be willing to have a longer conversation about that. Other questions, members? Yes. Representative Thompson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Barnaby, how is fraud, waste, all of the things you point out here, how are those things being monitored now to make sure that that doesn't happen?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Thompson, those things are being monitored currently by the current Inspector General's office right now. This bill would put more teeth and give the agency a lot more powers to tackle the problem of waste, fraud, and abuse.
Recognize.
So this duplicates something that's already in place. Is that what I should understand?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This strengthens what's already in place.
Strengthens. Thank you.
Other questions, members? Yes. Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Barnaby. The fiscal that's kind of thrown into the summary is about $2.5 million, and that's for the Auditor General's office, or that's what they're anticipating to operate this office. Is that true?
Recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davis, yes, that is the estimated cost of operating the office, $2.5 million per year.
Follow up.
Recognized.
So going along the lines of Rep. Thompson, where she said, we have offices in place that can do this, and specifically I'm looking at the Chief Inspector General's office included in this bill, as well as the Inspector General's office is included in this bill, investigating offices that have the ability to investigate, correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is correct.
And so we're looking at a piece of legislation that will cost us minimal $2.5 million for another office to be able to investigate, correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Members, other questions? Seeing no other questions, we are now in public testimony. David Sirdar, representing himself. Mr. Sirdar, you're recognized. Mr. Sirdar waving in support of the bill. Members, that concludes public testimony. We are now in debate. Members, anyone in debate? Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks. Thank you, Rep. Barnaby. I kind of outlined where I was going with this bill, and I'm just going to be short. So I understand creating this office of integrity to be able to get to some of the, to cure some of the waste and fraud that we're incurring in our state. And we definitely want to make sure we're doing the right things with taxpayers' dollars. But I was going down that line of, it feels like we have offices that are already in place, and Rep. Thompson started that conversation, so I have to join her. And in the staff analysis, it's just a minimum of $2.5 million to operate this office annually. So I think we already have offices in place to do this. And it's the dollars and cents to institute or implement another office at this particular cost, not really knowing what this office is going to cost us, is not the right thing we need to be doing with our dollars and cents right now with the deficit that we have with COVID and everything else. So with that, I will not be supporting this bill today, but thank you for your efforts and what you're trying to do.
Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I adore you. You know that. I think you are spectacular. I do have concerns about this bill, though, because I'm concerned that I don't know how much money we're going to spend that's not already being spent doing this work. So I would like to continue to work with you on this bill. I want to speak to the Auditor Generals and of that nature to find out where we can plug the, if there's a hole to plug and what we need to do about it. So I'm going to be down on this bill today, but I want to continue to work with you as it goes forward. Thank you.
Members, I would just mention that some of this work that's been undertaken by the House on a part-time basis, we have recovered more than $2 million with a part-time investigative unit already. And so I do think that there is value in having this conversation and seeing, you know, to what extent we can increase and strengthen the Auditor and Inspector General's role throughout our government. So with that, I thank Representative Barnaby for starting that conversation this year and look forward to this conversation continuing. Thank you, Representative Barnaby. You are recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wave close.
Sanjay, please call the roll on House Bill 1585.
Chair Grohl?
Yes.
Vice Chair Roach? Democrat Ranking Member Davis? No. Representative Brannon?
Yes.
Byrd?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Engolia?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Silvers? Smith?
Yes.
Stevenson? Tant?
No.
Thompson? Valdez?
No.
Bill passes.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Sanjay. By your vote, House Bill 1585 is reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Barnaby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Finally, today, members, we will hear from Representative Coster on PCB Pi 2103. Representative Coster, you are recognized to present the bill from the podium.
Thank you, Chair, for allowing me to present this committee bill. To give members of the committee some background on this bill dates back to 2016 when former Representative Jennifer Sullivan worked with her fellow colleagues on this very committee to build a policy consensus on ethics reform. This bill has passed unanimously or near unanimously every year since. The intent of the bill is to create transparency and accountability relating to the relationships and employment and contract relationships for state employees. Section 1 of the bill All that Section 1 does is repeals Florida Statute 11.061. And what that statute says is that principals of a state university or state college are required to register as lobbyists. That bill is rarely enforced. There's extra financial or extra disclosures that are required that are not actually done and are rarely ever enforced. And so we're repealing that section. And to sort of put this in perspective or give you an example, basically what it says is, you know, the president of FSU, who doesn't primarily lobby the legislature, is required to register as a lobbyist. But the president of, for example, Disney, is not required to register as a lobbyist. And so what the bill doesn't do is it doesn't remove the requirement for the state university's actual government relations team. They're still required to register as lobbyists under the joint rules. So that's Section 1 of this bill. Section 2 of the bill deals with conflicting relationships for employment and contractual relationships. It prohibits public officers and employees from soliciting an employment or contractual relationship from entities with which they are not permitted to do business while holding public office. So already, as state elected officials, we're prohibited from having certain employment. And what this bill does is it also prohibits, in subsection 7 of section 2, a solicit a job from an employer that we're not allowed to be employed with. Sounds somewhat common sense, but right now that's not currently in law. So this would add that solicitation prohibition. It also adds a disclosure requirement. So if someone like myself were to solicit a job from someone that I'm not allowed to have a job with, that person would have a disclosure requirement to the legislature. For example, if the head of DCF or even a program manager for DCF, they cannot solicit employment with a contracting CBC. It would already be illegal for them to have a job with a contracting CBC, but now this bill would add, it would also make it illegal to solicit a job from a contracting CBC. There's also a section of the bill that eliminates obsolete special exemptions. Section 3 of the bill creates new standards for statewide elected officials, officers, and legislators. It's substantively the same as current House Rule 15.5, which deals with the corrupt use of our official position. Service in the legislature is a part-time endeavor. I understand, as I'm sure all of you do, this is more of a full-time job. But we all have grounding elsewhere in our lives. And the intent of this bill is to look at it from that perspective and to be reasonable. We're not here to try to mess up people's livelihoods. Instead, we're just trying to build more transparency about our relationships. So again, this bill would prohibit soliciting employment that would arise out of somebody's public position. Except there are exceptions for a profession or an occupation in which somebody is previously engaged or has been formally trained. There's also an exception for the last 180 days of your service in your public office. So for example, I'm a lawyer in my private life. I'm still allowed to be a lawyer, and I'm still allowed to solicit jobs as a lawyer while I'm in public office. The bill also prohibits soliciting investment advice or entering into business ventures from a principal or a lobbyist. For example, buying real estate with a lobbyist, probably not a good idea under this bill. It also requires the lobbyist or principal to report certain prohibited solicitations and authorizes the Ethics Commission to investigate such reports as a complaint under the Ethics Code. The bill also would require immediate disclosure of any new employment or increased compensation from certain entities. For example, an entity that's expressly funded in an appropriation, a public agency, lobbyist or principal of a lobbying firm, or a employment or increased compensation that arises out of your official responsibilities. Section 4 amends Florida Statute Section 112.3185, which deals with additional standards for other state officers and agency employees. Essentially, this is the same as Sections 2 and 3, but it applies to unelected officials. It would also apply to, for example, policy chiefs or staff directors or folks that are in procurement. Essentially, if you're not if you are governed by the gift ban, you're also governed by the solicitation ban. And it would apply to any of those government employees that are required to do financial disclosures. Section 5 revises the state executive branch lobbying regulation, and it conforms the registration system to sort of update us and bring us into this electronic age. It requires email communications and email addresses to be provided, and it eliminates unnecessary paper documentation. It updates the commission's responsibilities in certain lobbyist compensation cases to conform to the practice in legislative lobbying enforcement and eliminate prosecutions for inadvertent reporting mistakes. And all that Section 6 of the bill does is conform some cross-references to the changes in the bill. That is the bill, Ms. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Koster. Are there questions on the bill? Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. Koster. I appreciate this. The question I have as I'm listening to your bill, what is the mechanism that triggers, I guess, this investigation if this isn't adhered to by, say, one of the legislators or someone else? What is the mechanism? Is it a form that's submitted? What is the mechanism?
Great question.
Recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Great question, Ranking Member Davis. So far, there haven't been disclosures under this bill, and the intent is that it would be in writing, and it's more of a substance over form. The disclosure needs to be made to the Ethics Commission, and then the Ethics Commission will review it, make their findings of fact, and then depending on who is the alleged violator of the bill, of the statute, would determine where it goes next. So, for example, if it's a House member that's being alleged to have violated the statute, it would go to the Speaker's office and then likely come here to this committee for determination on what happens next. If it's a Senate member, it would go to the President of the Senate. If it's an agency head, it would go from the Commission on Ethics to the Governor. If it's a lobbyist or principal of a lobbyist that's violating, then it would also go from the Commission on Ethics to the Governor. Does that answer your question?
It does. Follow-up, Chair.
Yes, you're recognized.
So I'm just going into the bill a little bit on page 13, in lines, 306 to 309, there's a retroactive part. And so I'm asking why that's retroactive for this particular specified period of time.
Thank you, Chair. I would have to potentially defer. My understanding would be the reason for that retroactivity is so that it would apply to this current legislature. That's my understanding. That time period would encompass all of us.
Okay. And then you're deferring to, are you answering or are you deferring?
That is my current understanding. I think Mr. Rubottom could confirm that, but that's my current understanding.
Okay, that's okay. Thank you. Follow-up, Chair?
You're recognized.
And with this particular bill, I know it's coming from our committee, but have we heard from any of this stakeholders, the commission or anyone like that? Or, do we reach out to, and I know we're the legislature, and sometimes we don't think we have to do that. But do we have any stakeholders involved in this?
I have not personally spoken with the Commission on Ethics, but this is a bill, and it's substantially similar to what we had up last year, and it has passed the House for the last 4 years. And, we're hoping to engage the Senate this year, but this is something that's gone through the House for the last 4 years.
Last question, Chair. Thank you for that. In reading this, it has a tone to it, an undertone, that there are things that some entities can do, and then there are things that it feels like the legislators are exempt from or prohibited from. It has that undertone. Do you have any clarification or thoughts to that? That's what I got when I read it.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I think I might need you to be more specific. I'm not sure what exactly it is that you're asking me.
You're recognized to clarify, Representative Davis.
Thank you. It feels like in the bill there are benefits for our legislators and there are not benefits because I heard you mention 180 days. Sometimes you're able to report the 180 days, but if you're an elected, and I may be reading it wrong, you don't have to or something like that. It just felt like it was benefits for the legislators that didn't apply or statewide elected officers that it didn't apply specifically to the other entities in this bill.
You're recognized.
And if you want to talk about it offline, we can do that.
Sure, we can do that. I think what you're referring to, and I can't find it right now specifically in the bill, is the 180-day exception to not the prohibition to solicitation. And the exception is if we're in our last 180 days of our term and we don't intend to run for reelection and we make it clear by a written letter to the Secretary of State that we don't intend to run for reelection, then within those 180 days, we are allowed to solicit employment with a job that we would not have otherwise been allowed to solicit employment. I don't know that that would necessarily, I think the distinction would be that an unelected official doesn't really have 180 days left because they don't have a term, right? They're not a contract or a termed employee of the state. So I think that's the distinction, but without seeing the specific language that you were talking, but we can talk about it more offline, but my understanding is that would be the distinction.
Thank you, and thank you for that.
Thank you, members. Are there any other questions on the bill? Seeing none, we're in public testimony on the bill. Mr. David Sirdar is a proponent of the bill. Thank you, members. That is the extent of public comment. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Brandon, you're recognized.
Thank you. I had this bill last year, and I just want to congratulate you. But besides explaining all the different facets, those were excellent examples. And I think Mr. Rubottom would probably agree you were probably a better student than I was.
Thank you, Representative. Any other public or debate on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Custer, you are recognized to close on the PCB.
I will waive close, Chair.
Having waived close on PCB Pi 2103, Sanjay, would you please call the roll?
Chair Grawl?
Yes.
Vice Chair Roach? Democrat Ranking Member Davis? Yes. Representative Brannon?
Yes.
Byrd?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Engolia?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Silvers? Smith?
Yes.
Stevenson? Tant?
Yes.
Thompson? Yes. Valdez?
Yes.
Bill passes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Sanjay. By your vote, members, PCB Pi 2103 is reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Coster, for your presentation. And members, that concludes the business of Pi today. And without objection, Representative Coster moves we adjourn, and without objection, we do. Thank you.